Meg Whyn Owen and Patrick Allen in the second episode of Jane Eyre, adapted by Barbara Cooper from a novel by Charlotte Bronte. Jane Eyre had found some peace and security in her new post as governess to little Adele at Thornfield Hall. Mr. Rochester, Adele's guardian, was absent, but Jane received much kindness from the old housekeeper, Mrs. Fairfax. One winter day, Jane witnessed an accident, a rider thrown and hurt when his horse slipped on the ice. She helped him to remount and came back to Thornfield, disturbed by the encounter and by her memory of the horseman's stern, dark face. In the house, she found a dog, the black and white dog she had last seen running beside the stranger's horse.
Yeah? What dog is this?
He came with the master, miss.
With whom?
With master, Mr. Rochester. He has just arrived.
Indeed?
He's yet there, all in the dining room. And John has gone for a surgeon. The master has had an accident. His horse fell and his ankle is sprained.
Did the horse fall in Hay Lane?
Yes. Coming down the hill, it slipped on some ice. Miss Eyre, is anything the matter?
Give me a candle, will you, Lear? I must go upstairs and take off my things. Mr. Rochester went to bed early that night, nor did he rise soon next morning. When he did come down, it was to attend to business. I didn't see him, but I discerned that Thornfield Hall was a changed place. It had a master. For my part, I liked it better. That evening, my work completed, I had just sat down by the fireside when Mrs. Fairfax came in.
Oh, Miss Eyre, Mr. Rochester would be glad if you and your pupil would take tea with him in the drawing room this evening.
When is his tea time?
At 6 o'clock.
Here is Miss Eyre, sir.
Let Miss Eyre be seated.
You must be tired, Mr. Rochester. So much business during the day and the annoyance of a painful strain, which I sincerely...
Madam, I should like some tea.
Of course, of course. Miss Eyre, will you hand Mr. Rochester's cup? Adele might perhaps spill it.
Mr. Monsieur, qu'il y a un cadeau pour Mademoiselle Eyre dans votre petit coffre.
Now, who talks of cadeau? Did you expect a present, Miss Eyre?
I hardly know, sir. I've little experience of them. Besides, I am a stranger and I've done nothing to...
Oh, don't fall back on noble modesty. I have examined Adele and find that you've taken great pains with her. She's not bright, she has no talents, yet in a short time she has made much improvement.
Sir, you've now given me my cadeau. I am obliged to you.
Mademoiselle, she's a woman's...
Adele, amuse yourself with Pilot over there. And you, Miss Eyre, draw your chair to the fire. You have been resident in my house, sir, 3 months.
Yes, sir.
And you come from?
From Lowood School.
Ah, charitable concern. How long were you there?
8 years.
8 years? You must be tenacious of life. No wonder you have rather the look of another world. I marveled where you got that sort of face. Now, when you came on me in Hay Lane last night, I thought unaccountably of fairy tales. And had half a mind to demand whether you had bewitched my horse. I am not sure yet. Who are your parents?
I have none.
Nor ever had, I suppose. Do you remember them?
No.
I thought not. And so you were waiting for your people when you sat on that stile.
For whom, sir?
For the man in green. Did I break through one of your rings that you spread that damned ice on the causeway?
The men in green all forsook England 100 years ago.
Miss Eyre has been an invaluable companion to me, Mr. Rochester, and a kind and careful teacher.
Now, don't trouble to give her a character. I shall judge for myself. She began by felling my horse.
Sir!
I have to thank her for this spring.
Oh, Mr.
What age were you when you went to Lowood, Miss Eyre?
About 10.
And you stayed there 8 years and are now then 18. What did you learn at Lowood? Can you play the piano?
A little.
Of course, that is the established answer. I heard you this morning. You do play a little, like any other schoolgirl, perhaps rather better than some, but not well. Adele showed me some sketches this morning, which she said were yours. Be good enough to bid her fetch them.
Oui, oui, monsieur, what you say? Je suis.
I don't know whether they are entirely of your doing. Probably a master, Ada Jones.
No, indeed.
Ah, that pricks pride. But don't pass your word unless you are certain I can recognize patchwork.
Then I will say nothing, and you shall judge for yourself, sir.
Liberty! Venez, Madame Jervis! Regardez-les de sein de Mademoiselle Eyre. Oh, considerably.
Very pretty indeed.
When did you find time to do them? They've taken much time and some thought.
I did them in the last two vacations I spent at Lowood.
And these drawings are, for a schoolgirl, peculiar. As to the thoughts, they are elfish. And who taught you to paint wind? There is a high gale in that sky. There, put the drawings away. What are you about, Miss Eyre? It is 9 o'clock. Take Adele to bed. I wish you all good night now.
Good night, sir.
Now, thank you. I can manage.
For several subsequent days, I saw little of Mr. Rochester. He seemed much engaged with business. One day, a message came that I and Adele were to go downstairs. We descended. Adele wondering whether her present was at length come. For owing to some mistake, its arrival had hitherto been delayed. She was gratified. There it stood on the table.
Yes, there is your box at last. Take it into a corner, you genuine daughter of Paris, and amuse yourself with disemboweling it. And let your operation be conducted in silence. Tiens-toi tranquille, enfant, comprends-tu? Come forward, Miss Anne. Be seated here. Oh, I'm not fond of the prattle of children. Don't draw that chair further off, Miss Anne. Sit down exactly where I placed it. If you please, that is. Oh, confound these civilities. I continually forget them. Nor do I particularly affect simple-minded old ladies, though it won't do to neglect Mrs. Fairfax. Ah, madam, good evening. I sent for you for a charitable purpose.
Yes.
I have forbidden Adele to talk to me about her presence. It'll be one of the most benevolent acts you ever performed.
Yes.
Now I have played the part of a good host, I ought to be at liberty to attend my own pleasure. You examine me, Miss Eyre. Do you think me handsome?
No, sir.
Ah, by my word. There is something singular about you. You have the air of a little nonnette. Quaint, quiet, grave, and simple as you sit with your hands before you. And when one asks you a question, you rap out a round rejoinder, which, if not blunt, is at least brusque. What do you mean by it?
Sir, I was too plain. I beg your pardon. I ought to have replied that it was not easy to give an impromptu answer to a question about appearances.
You ought to have replied no such thing. Go on. What fault do you find with me, pray? I suppose I have all my limbs and features like any other man. You look very puzzled, Miss Eyre. No, you are not pretty any more than I am handsome, yet a puzzled air becomes you. Young lady, I am disposed to be gregarious and communicative tonight. It would please me to learn more of you. Therefore, speak.
Speak. What about, sir?
Whatever you like. You are dumb, Miss Eyre, stubborn and annoyed. Miss Eyre, I beg your pardon. The fact is, I don't wish to treat you like an inferior.
I'm willing to amuse you if I can, sir. But how do I know what will interest you? Ask me questions, and I will do my best to answer them.
Then, do you agree that I have a right to be a little masterful, abrupt, on the ground that I'm old enough to be your father?
Do as you please, sir.
That is no answer. Rather, it is very irritating, because a very evasive one replied clearly.
I don't think, sir, you have the right to command me merely because you are older than I, or because you've seen more of the world than I have.
Promptly spoken. Then you will receive my orders now and then without being piqued or hurt by the tone of command, will you? You smile, Miss Eyre.
I was thinking, sir, that very few masters would trouble themselves to inquire whether or not their paid subordinates were piqued and hurt by their orders.
Paid subordinates? Oh, yes. I'd forgotten the salary. Well, will you consent to dispense with a great many conventional forms and phrases without thinking that the omission arises from insolence?
I'm sure, sir, I should never mistake informality for insolence. One I rather like. The other, nothing Freeborn would submit to, even for a salary.
Now, humbug. Most things Freeborn will submit to anything for a salary. Not 3,000 raw schoolgirl governesses would have answered me as you have just done. But I don't mean to flatter you. If you are cast in a different mold to the majority, it is no merit of yours. I was thrust onto a wrong tack at the age of 21. I've never recovered the right course since. When fate wronged me, I had not the wisdom to remain cool. I turned desperate. Then I degenerated. Oh, I wish I had stood firm. God knows I do. Dread remorse when you are tempted to err, Miss Eyre. Remorse is the poison of life.
Repentance is said to be its cure, sir.
It is not its cure. Reformation may be its cure. I have the strength yet for that, if... Where is the use of thinking of it, hampered, burdened, and cursed as I am? Besides, since happiness is irrevocably denied me, I have a right to get pleasure out of life, and I will get it, cost what it may.
Then you will degenerate still more, sir.
How do you know? You have no right to preach to me, you neophyte that have not passed the porch of life.
I only remind you of your own words, sir. You said error brought remorse.
Where are you going?
To put Adele to bed. It is past her bedtime.
Never mind. Wait a minute. Adele is not ready to go to bed yet. She pulled out of her box about 10 minutes ago a little pink silk frock. In a moment, she will re-enter. Stay now and see.
It's the Mary, Lydia. Yes. And my shoes and my stockings. Oh, look, I dance for you.
It is a very pretty frock.
Monsieur, je vous remercie mille fois de votre bonté. It is like that my maman thanked you, is it not?
Precisely. And like that, she charmed my English gold out of my British breeches pocket. Enough. Enough. Go to bed.
Oh, but monsieur.
Did you not hear me? Please. Take your charge, Miss Eyre. Good night. Good night.
During the next few weeks, Mr. Rochester's deportment became more uniform to me. When he met me unexpectedly, the encounter seemed welcome. He always had a word and sometimes a smile for me. I felt at times as if he were my relation rather than my master. And was Mr. Rochester now ugly in my eyes? No. Gratitude and many associations, all pleasurable, made his face the object I liked best to see. I cannot deny also that I grieved for his grief, whatever that was, and would have given much to assuage it. What alienated him from the house? Would he leave it again soon? Suppose he should be absent spring, summer, and autumn. How joyless sunshine and fine days would seem. These thoughts, not for the first time, filled my mind as I lay in bed one night, unable to sleep for thinking of my master. The clock had just struck 2 when I heard a sound. A chilling sound. Uttered, as it seemed, at the very keyhole of my chamber door. What is it? Who is it? Grace Poole. Is she possessed with a devil? I felt I could no longer remain by myself. I must go to Mrs. Fairfax. I hurried on my frock and shawl, and trembling left my own room. There was a strong smell of burning, and clouds of smoke rushed from an open door, the door of Mr. Rochester's room. Within, tongues of flame darted round the bed.
Wake, sir! Wake, Mr. Rochester! Oh, sir, I can't do. Oh, the smoke has stupefied him. What shall I do? Water?
In the name of all the elves in Christendom, who is it? Well, is that you, Jane, eh?
Yes, sir.
What have you done with me, witch sorceress? You plotted to drown me.
No, sir. But there's been a fire. Get up, do. For somebody has plotted something.
There. Well, I'm up now, but at your peril, light a candle yet. Wait a moment till I get in some dry garments, if they're dry as they be. Ah, yes. Here's my dressing gown. Now, we will light a candle. Ah, a pretty sight indeed. The bed blackened and scorched, the carpet round swimming in water. What is it? And who did it?
I heard footsteps outside my room, sir, and a terrible laugh. I was afraid and decided to get up in search of Mrs. Fairfax. When I opened my door, I realized that your room was on fire. Shall I call Mrs. Fairfax?
Not at all. Just be still. I forget whether you said you saw anything when you opened your chamber door.
No, sir. Only a candlestick on the ground.
But you heard an odd laugh. You've heard that laugh before, I should think, or something like it.
Yes, sir. There is a woman who sews here called Grace Poole. She laughs in that way.
Just so. I'm going to leave you for a few minutes. I must pay a visit to the second story. I shall take the candle. Remain where you are till my return.
He went. I watched the light withdraw as he passed up the gallery very softly, and I was left in total darkness. A very long time elapsed. I grew weary. I was on the point of risking Mr. Rochester's displeasure by disobeying his orders, when the light once more gleamed dimly along the gallery wall. He re-entered, pale and very gloomy.
I have found it all out. It is as I thought.
How, sir?
Grace Poole, you have guessed it. She is singular, very. You are not talking fools. Say nothing about it. I will account for the fire in my room.
Good night, then, sir.
What, sir? Are you quitting me already? And in that way?
I thought you wished me to, sir.
But not without taking leave, not in that brief, dry fashion. You have saved my life, at least. Shake hands.
There, sir.
You have saved my life. I have pleasure in owing you so immense a debt. I cannot say more. I feel your benefits no burden, Jane.
Good night again, sir. There is no debt, benefit, or obligation in the case.
What? You will go?
I am cold, sir. If you would free my hand, sir. I think I hear Mrs. Fairfax move, sir.
Well, leave me. There.
Good night, sir. I did not see Mr. Rochester the next day. Grace Poole was still in the house, stayed and taciturn as always, betraying no sense of guilt, no fear of detection. I could not understand it. And why had Mr. Rochester enjoined me to secrecy? I was puzzling my brains during the afternoon when Leah came to tell me tea was ready.
That's right, my dear. You must want your tea. You ate so little at dinner. Will you fill the teapot while I knit off this needle?
Yes.
It is a fair night, though not starlight. Mr. Rochester has, on the whole, had a favorable day for his journey.
Journey? Is Mr. Rochester gone anywhere?
Oh, he set off the moment he had breakfasted. He's gone to the Lees, Mr. Eshton's place. I believe there is quite a party assembled there. Lord Ingram, Sir George Lynn, Colonel Dent. Mr. Rochester is a general favorite. The ladies are very fond of him.
Are there ladies at the Lees?
Oh, there are Mrs. Eshton and her two daughters, and there is the Honorable Blanche Ingram. Blanche came here to a Christmas ball and party Mr. Rochester gave. She was considered the belle of the evening.
What was she like?
Oh, tall and beautiful, with an olive complexion. She was dressed in pure white, I remember, and wore an amber-colored flower in her hair. It contrasted well with the jetty mass of curls.
She was greatly admired, of course.
Oh, yes, indeed. And not only for her beauty, but for her accomplishments. She and Mr. Rochester sang a duet.
And this beautiful and accomplished lady is not yet married?
It appears not. I fancy she has not a very large fortune.
But I wonder no wealthy nobleman or gentleman has taken a fancy to her. Mr. Rochester, for instance, he is rich, is he not?
Oh, yes, but you see, there is a considerable difference in age. Mr. Rochester is nearly 40. She is but 25.
Mr. Rochester had been absent upwards of a fortnight when the post brought Mrs. Fairfax a letter intimating his intention of returning in 3 days' time. He directed preparations to be made for the reception of a large party of ladies and gentlemen who would accompany him.
Madame, you are not to peep through the banister. Come along.
Oh, please, Mama. Oh, voilà. Monsieur Rochester is a tall, dark lady. She smiles at him so sweetly. Do you think she loves him, mademoiselle?
I cannot say, madame. But I expect Mr. Rochester admires so beautiful a lady as Miss Ingram.
Regardez, two pretty young mademoiselles.
Come now to supper, Adele.
Oh, please, Madame Fairfax. Madame, please, can I...
Yes, Adele, dear, you can. Miss Eyre, Mr. Rochester wishes Adele to come into the drawing room after dinner and requests you to accompany her.
I need not go, I'm sure. He included me out of mere politeness.
Well, I observed to him that you were unused to company, and he replied in his quick way, nonsense. If she objects, tell her it is my particular wish, and if she resists, say I shall come and fetch her.
I will not give him that trouble. I will go, if no better, maybe. But I don't like it.
I must leave you now, as I have more than enough to do.
My best dress, the silver grey one, purchased for Miss Temple's wedding and never worn since, was soon put on. My hair was soon smoothed. My sole ornament, the little pearl brooch given to me as a parting present by Miss Temple, soon assumed. Adele sat down without a word on the footstool I pointed out to her, and I retired to a window seat, and taking a book, endeavored to read. A soft sound of rising from the table now became audible. The curtain was swept back from the arch. A band of ladies stood in the opening. I rose and curtsied to them. One or two bent their heads in return. The others only stared at me.
Bonjour, mademoiselle Ingram. Bonjour, mesdames.
Oh, what a little puppet. Who is she, Mrs. Ashton?
Why, Blanche, dear, it is Mr. Rochester's ward, I suppose. The little French girl he was speaking of.
Oh, what a love. Louisa.
Oh, the sweet child. Come here and talk to my sister Amy and myself, dear.
Coffee, madam.
Thank you, with cream.
But our roses never do really well. The soil is too light, Mrs. Ashton.
Coffee, madam.
Thank you.
Of course, I am greatly attached to flowers.
Ah, here are the gentlemen.
They're not deserting us for long tonight, Blanche, Mama.
No, indeed, Mama.
Lady Ingram, it was impossible to deny ourselves the pleasure of your company for one moment more.
Now, Mr.
Lynn. Coffee, sir.
Bonjour, mademoiselle. Comment vous portez?
Oh, bravo, Lynn. A worthy effort, indeed.
Oh, please, I speak English, too.
Oh, come, dear child, and talk with me.
Madame.
Mr. Rochester. I thought you were not fond of children.
Nor am I, Miss Ingram.
Then what induced you to take charge of such a little doll as that? Where did you pick her up?
I did not pick her up. She was left on my hands.
You should have sent her to school.
I could not afford it. Schools are so dear.
Why, I suppose you have a governess for her. I saw a person with her just now. Is she gone? Oh, no, there she is, still behind the window curtain. You pay her, of course. I should think it quite as expensive. More so, for you have them both to keep in addition.
I have not considered the subject.
You should hear Mama on the chapter of governesses. We have had a dozen at least in our day. Half of them detestable and the rest ridiculous. Were they not, Mama?
My dearest, don't mention them. Thank heavens I've now done with them.
Pray forgive me, Lady Ingram, but I fear Mr. Rochester's governess can overhear you. Perhaps
it would be. I hope it may do her good. I know it is her. I am a judge of physiognomy. And in her, I see all the faults of her class.
What are they, Lady Ingram?
I will tell you in your private ear.
Ah, but my curiosity will be past its appetite. It craves food now.
Ask Blanche, she is nearer you than I.
Oh, don't refer him to me, Mama. I have just one word to say of the whole tribe. They are a nuisance. I move the introduction of a new topic, Mr. Rochester. Do you second my motion?
Madam, I support you on this point as on every other.
Then on me be the onus of bringing it forward. Signor Eduardo, are you in voice tonight?
Donna Bianca, if you command it, I will be.
Here is a duet. Come, and I will play for it.
When the song was over, I made my exit by the side door. As I was crossing the hall, I perceived my sandal was loose. I stopped to tie it.
How do you do, Miss Anne?
I'm tired, sir.
And a little depressed. What about, tell me?
Nothing. Nothing, sir. I am not depressed.
But I affirm that you are so much depressed that a few more words would bring tears to your eyes. Indeed. They are there now. Shining and swimming. I would know what it all means. Well, tonight I will excuse you, but understand that so long as my visitors stay, I expect you to appear in the drawing room every evening. It is my wish. Don't neglect it. Good night, my... Good night.
It was not long before I realized that my master, Mr. Rochester, was going to marry Miss Ingram. But the obvious absence of passion in his sentiments towards her increased my ever-torturing pain, for I felt that he had not given her his love. A few days later, Mr. Rochester was summoned to Millcote on business. Tea was finished, and the company was assembled in the drawing room. Blanche Ingram was playing over some sentimental airs on the piano. I was in my usual nook in the window seat.
Voilà Monsieur Rochester qui revient.
Mr. Rochester? Is he returned?
Oh, but yes, Mademoiselle Ingram.
But where did he come now in the post chaise? He rode Miss Rohr, did he not? And Pilot was with him. What has he done with the animal?
Amy, Mr. Rochester is home. Oh, let me see. Why, no, Louisa. A tall stranger is getting out.
Oh, provoking. You tiresome monkey, Adele. Who perched you up in the window to give false intelligence?
I didn't know we were to expect further visitors to join the house party. Blanche, did you?
The more the merrier, what? Mr. Mason.
Mama... Had you not better... Indeed, yes, Blanche, my love. Sir, Mr. Rochester is away from home this afternoon. He should return shortly.
It appears I come at an inopportune time, madam, when my friend Mr. Rochester is from home. But I arrived from a very long journey, and I think I may presume so far on an old and intimate acquaintance as to install myself here till he returns.
Oh, why, sir, we are sure Mr. Rochester will be delighted. And now, in the absence of your host, I will call upon Colonel Dent to effect the introduction.
Ah, why, with the greatest of pleasure, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Oh,
what a lovely creature. I adore him already. Oh, what a sweet-tempered bride he has, Louisa. And such a placid eye and smile.
Yes, yes. Jamaica, Kingston, Spanish Town.
Yeah, I knew a fellow who died out there, poor chap.
Yeah, troublesome time is, I should imagine.
If you please, Mr. Lynn, sir.
Yes, Sam, what is it?
There's an old gypsy woman below, and she's becoming quite troublesome.
Wants to tell the gentry their fortunes.
Do let's have her in.
Yes, it'd be a thousand pities to throw away such a chance of fun.
My dear children, what are you thinking about? I cannot possibly countenance
it. Indeed, Mama, but you can and will.
Let her come in.
Excellent sport, what?
Oh, she looks a rough one, ma'am. She says I must show her into a room by herself. And those who wish to consult her must go to her one by one.
Show her into the library.
Very good, ma'am. Oh, she says she'll have no gentlemen nor any ladies either, except the young and single.
By Jove, she has taste.
I'll go first.
Oh, my best. Oh, my dearest. Pause. Reflect.
A comparative silence ensued. 15 minutes were counted before the library door opened. And Miss Ingram returned. She looked neither flurried nor merry. She walked stiffly to her seat and took it in silence.
Well, Blanche,
what do you think? How do you feel?
I've merely seen a gypsy vagabond who told me what such people usually tell.
And Miss Ingram took a book, leant back in her chair, and so declined further conversation. Meantime, Amy and Louisa Ashton declared they would go together. Their visit was not so still as Miss Ingram's had been. He heard hysterical giggling and little shrieks proceeding from the library. And then the door burst open and they came running across the room as if they were half scared out of their wits.
That's it, by Jove. Clever, what?
What now, Sam?
If you please, sir, the gypsy declares that there is another young single lady who has not been to her yet. She will not go till she has seen all.
There is no one else.
Oh, I thought it might be Miss Eyre.
The governess? Really? Oh, I will go by all means.
Well, and you want your fortune told?
I don't care about it, Mother. You may please yourself. But I ought to warn you, I have no faith.
It's like your impudence to say so. I heard it in your step as you crossed the threshold.
Did you? You've a quick ear.
I need it when I've customers like you to deal with. Why don't you tremble?
I'm not cold.
Why don't you turn pale?
I'm not sick.
Why don't you consult my art?
I'm not silly.
You are cold. You are sick. And you are silly.
Prove it.
You are cold because you are alone. You are sick because the best of feelings, the highest and sweetest given to man, keeps away from you. You are silly because, suffer as you may, you will not beckon it to approach.
You might say all that to almost anyone who you knew lived as a solitary dependent in a great house.
Show me your palm. It is too fine. I can make nothing of such a hand as that. Besides, destiny is not written there.
I believe you.
It is in the face. Kneel and lift up your head. I wonder what thoughts are busy in your heart when you sit in yonder room with the fine people flitting before you like shapes in a magic lantern. Do you never single one of them from the rest, or it may be two?
I know none of them here. I have scarcely interchanged a syllable with one of them.
Will you say that of the master of the house?
I can scarcely see what Mr. Rochester has to do with the theme you had introduced.
I was talking of ladies smiling in the eyes of gentlemen. You have seen love, have you not? And looking forward, you have seen Mr. Rochester married and beheld his bride happy?
Not exactly. Your witch's skill is rather at fault.
What the devil have you seen then?
Never mind. I came here to inquire, not to confess. Is it known that Mr. Rochester is to be married?
Yes, and to the beautiful Miss Ingram.
Shortly?
Why? He must love such a handsome, noble, witty, accomplished lady. And probably she loves him, or if not his person, at least his purse.
Mother, I did not come to hear Mr. Rochester's fortune. I came to hear my own.
Your fortune is yet doubtful. Kneel again on the rug.
Don't keep me long. The fire scorches me.
The flame flickers in the eye. It looks soft and full of feeling. It smiles at my jargon. As to the mouth, it delights at times in laughter, and that brow professes to say, I can live alone if self-respect and circumstances require me to do so. I need not sell my soul to buy bliss. Strong wind, earthquake, shock, and fire may pass by, but I shall follow the guiding of that still small voice which interprets the dictates of conscience.
That will do. I think I rave in a kind of exquisite delirium. I have acted as I inwardly swore I would act, but further my trial be beyond my strength. Rise, Miss Eyre. Leave me, the play is played out.
Sir. Why, sir.
Oh, Jane, do you know me?
Only take off the red cloak and
then... The string is in a knot. Help me.
Break it, sir.
Ah. There, then. Off ye lendings.
Oh, sir, what a strange idea. I believe you've been trying to draw me out or in. You've been talking nonsense to make me talk nonsense. It is scarcely fair, sir.
Do you forgive me, Jane?
I cannot tell till I've thought it over. I shall try to forgive you, but it was not right.
No. You have been very correct, very careful, very sensible.
I have your permission to retire now, I suppose.
No, stay a moment. And tell me what the people in the drawing room yonder are doing.
Discussing the gypsy, I guess, eh? Oh, are you aware, Mr. Rochester, that a stranger has arrived here since you left this morning?
A stranger? No. Who can it be?
He said he'd known you long and that he could take the liberty of installing himself here till you returned.
Ah, devil, he did. What did he give his name?
His name is Mason, sir, and he...
Mason?
And he comes from the West Indies, I think.
Mason? The West Indies? Mason? The West Indies?
Do you feel ill, Mr. Rochester?
Jane, I've got a blow. I've got a blow, Jane.
Sir?
Sit down here beside me.
Yes, sir.
Now, give me your hand. So, my little friend. I wish I were in a quiet island with only you and trouble and danger and hideous recollections removed from me.
Can I help you, sir? I'd give my life to serve you.
Jane, if aid is wanted, I'll seek it at your hands, I promise you that.
Thank you, sir.
Fetch me now, Jane, a glass of wine. And tell me if Mason is still with my guests and what he is doing.
I'll go at once, sir.
Oh, my God. Heaven help me. Heaven help me. Foolish of me to imagine I could ever be allowed to forget. To be free.
Here, sir. Drink. That is better. Your color's returning.
What are they all doing, Jane?
Laughing and talking, sir.
They don't look grave and mysterious as if they'd heard something strange.
Not at all.
And Mason?
He was laughing, too.
If all these people came in a body and spat at me, what would you do, Jane?
Turn them out of the room, sir. If I could.
But if I were to go to them and... They only looked at me coldly and then left me one by one. What then? Would you go with them?
I rather think not, sir. I should have more pleasure in staying with you.
To comfort me?
Yes, sir. To comfort you as well as I could.
Go back now into the room. Step quietly up to Mason and whisper in his ear that Mr. Rochester has come and wishes to see him. Here and then leave me.
Yes, sir.
At a late hour, after I'd been in bed some time, I heard the visitors repair to their chambers. I distinguished Mr. Rochester's voice and heard him say, "This way, Mason. This is your room." He spoke cheerfully. The gay tone set my heart at ease. I was soon asleep. I awoke in the dead of night, for I had forgotten to draw my curtain, which I usually did. The moon, glorious and bright, shone through the unveiled panes. It was beautiful, but too solemn. I half rose and stretched my arm to draw the curtain.
Oh, where the devil is Rochester? I cannot find him in his bed.
Here, be composed, all of you. I'm coming.
What awful events have taken place, Mr. Rochester? Speak! Let him know the worst that was.
Now, ladies, don't pull me down or strangle me. Ladies, keep off, or I shall wax dangerous.
Yes, but Rochester...
A servant has had the nightmare, that is all. She's an excitable, nervous person and has taken a fit with fright. Now, I must see you all back into your rooms. A gentleman, have the goodness to set the ladies an example.
Yes, Lord.
Madame, you will take cold if you stay in this chill gallery any longer. Please, back to your rooms.
I retreated unnoticed. Not, however, to go to bed. On the contrary, I began and dressed myself carefully and waited for I knew not what. Soon, a cautious hand tapped low at the door. And I heard the voice I expected to hear. My master's.
Are you up?
Yes, sir.
And dressed?
Yes.
Come then. I want you. Have you a sponge in your room and any volatile sauce?
Yes, sir.
Bring them both now. You don't turn sick at the sight of blood.
I think I shall not.
Good. Now come this way. Take your time and make no noise. Stand here a moment, Jane.
Yes, sir.
Now, Jane, come here, round the side of the screen.
Oh, it's Mr. Mason. He's hurt.
Yes, bleeding pretty badly from his arm. Now hold the candle nearer the basin of water and wipe his face with a sponge. Now, hold the smelling sauce under his nose. Again. Now, there, he's coming to.
Is there any immediate danger, Fairfax?
No, a mere scratch. Don't be so overcome, man. I'll fetch a surgeon for you now myself. Just let me sponge the blood from this arm. Jane.
Yes, sir?
I shall have to leave you in this room with this gentleman. You will sponge the blood as I do when it returns. If he faints, you will put the glass of water to his lips.
Yes, sir.
You will not speak to him on any pretext. And, Richard. It will be at the peril of your life if you speak to her. Open your lips, agitate yourself. I'll not answer for the consequences.
But Fairfax...
Remember, no conversation.
Night was around me. A pale and bloody spectacle under my eyes and hands. And a murderess hardly separated from me by a single door. I shuddered at the thought of Grace Poole bursting out upon me. When will Mr. Rochester come? When will he come? I cried inwardly. The candle, wasted at last, went out. As it expired, I perceived streaks of grey light edging the window curtains. Presently, I heard Pilot bark far below. In 5 minutes more, the grating key warned me my watch was relieved. It could not have lasted 2 hours. Many a week has seemed shorter.
Now, Dr. Carter, be on the alert. Dress the wound, fasten the bandage, and get the patient downstairs.
But is he fit to move, sir?
No doubt of it.
She's done for me, I fear.
Not a whit, Mason. Courage! Carter, assure him there's no danger.
I can do that conscientiously. Sonny, I wish I could have got here sooner. Hold that, will you? He wouldn't have bled so much. How is this? The flesh on the shoulder is torn as well as cut. This wound was not done with a knife. There have been teeth here.
She bit me. She worried me like a tigress when Rochester got the knife from her.
It was mere folly to attempt the interview tonight. And alone.
I thought I could have done some good. God, that's painful.
Oh, hurry, hurry. The sun will soon rise and I must have him off.
Yes, Director, sir. I must look at this other wound.
She sucked the blood. She said she drained my heart. Impossible to forget this night.
It is not impossible. Have some energy, man. Carter, have you nearly done?
Nearly, sir. My pulse is weak. Perhaps a stimulant.
Jen.
Sir?
Pour a glass of wine from this bottle.
Yes, sir. Come, Mr. Mason. I will hold it for you. Now, drink.
Yes, drink, Richard. We'll give you the heart you lack. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll make you decent in a trice. Here's a clean shirt and a neckerchief. Oh, Jane, the third clerk from the end of the bed.
Yes, sir.
You'll be on your feet in a minute now, Richard. Now, Carter, take him under the other shoulder. Come here. Be a good cheer, Richard. Step out. That's it. Keep him at your house, Carter, till he's quite well.
Yes, of course.
I shall ride over in a day or two to see how he gets on. Goodbye, Richard.
Goodbye.
Well, what is it?
Let her be taken care of. Let her be treated as tenderly as may be. Let her.
I do my best. And have done it and will do it. Yes, what to God was an end of all this. An end of all this. Jane.
Sir?
Come where there is some freshness for a few moments. Here, in this arbor. Sit down. Will you have a flower, Jane?
Thank you, sir.
You have passed a strange night, Jane.
Yes, sir.
Were you afraid when I left you alone, Mason?
I was afraid of someone coming out of the inner room.
But I'd fastened the door. You were safe.
Will Grace Poole live here still, sir?
Oh, yes. Don't trouble your head about her.
Is the danger you apprehended last night gone by now, sir?
I cannot vouch for that till Mason is out of England, nor even then. To live for me is to stand on a crater crust which may crack and spew fire any day. Now you look puzzled. And I will puzzle you still further. Jane, you are my little friend, are you not?
I like to serve you, sir. And obey you in all that is right.
Precisely. In all that is right. For if I bid you do what you thought wrong, you would then turn to me quiet and pale and would say, "No, sir, that is impossible. I cannot do it."
I do not understand you, sir.
I'll put a case to you. Imagine yourself in a remote land. Conceive that you there commit a capital error whose consequences must follow you through life. Heart-weary and soul-withered, you come home after years of voluntary banishment. You make a new acquaintance. You find happiness in this stranger. You feel better days come back. You desire to recommence your life. To attain this end, are you justified in overleaping an obstacle of custom, a mere conventional impediment? Is the wandering and sinful but now rest-seeking and repentant man justified in daring the world's opinion, Jane, in order to attach to him forever this gentle, gracious, genial stranger, thereby securing his own peace of mind and regeneration of life?
Sir, a wanderer's repose or a sinner's reformation should never depend on a fellow creature. Men and women die.
If anyone you know has suffered and erred, let him look higher than his equals for strength to amend and solace to heal.
But the instrument, God who does the work ordains the instrument. I have myself, I tell it you without parable, been a worldly, dissipated, restless man, and I believe I have found the instrument for my cure in...
Sir?
In... Jane, you have noticed my tender penchant for Miss Ingram. Don't you think if I married her, she would regenerate me with a vengeance?
I...
Jane. Jane, you are quite pale with your vigils. Don't you curse me for disturbing your rest?
Curse you? No, sir.
Shake hands in confirmation of the word. Oh, what cold fingers. They were warmer last night when I touched them. Jane, when will you watch with me again?
Whenever I can be useful, sir.
For instance, the night before I am married?
Aye.
Will you promise to sit up with me to bear me company? To you, I can talk of my lovely one, for now you have seen her and know her.
Yes, sir.
She's a rare one. Is she not, Jane?
Yes, sir.
A strapper. A real strapper, Jane. With hair just such as the ladies of Carthage must have had. Ah, bless me. There's Dent and Lynn in the stables. Go in by the shrubbery through that wicket. Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
Mason got the start of you all this morning. He was gone before sunrise. I rose at 4 to see him off.
In the second part of Jane Eyre, adapted by Barbara Cooper from a novel by Charlotte Bronte, Jane Eyre was played by Meg Wynn Owen and Mr. Rochester by Patrick Allen. Mrs. Fairfax, Betty Hardy, Adele, Joe Manning Wilson, Leah, Sheila Grant, Blanche Ingram, Maddie Head, Mrs. Eshton, Sheila Grant, Amy Eshton, Jenny McCracken, Louisa Eshton, Jane Knowles, Dowager Lady Ingram, Eva Stewart, Colonel Dent, Martin Friend, Henry Lynn, Michael Harbour, Lord Ingram, Nigel Anthony, Mr. Mason, Peter Marinka, Dr. Carter, Martin Friend, Bertha, Sheila Grant. The pianist was Winifred Davy, and the episode was produced by Betty Davis.